Why Chinese companies listing in the U.S. have the Chinese government so worried. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore in for David Brancaccio. First, Delta Airlines reports earnings today. Analysts on average expect the company to report sales growth of 322%. That's compared to the dismal days of a year ago. People are flying again, but they're flying mostly for fun. Business travel is nowhere near what it had been before the pandemic. So what is happening to all those first class and premium seats that used to go on company credit cards? Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more.
Business travelers used to make up about 70% of the folks in first class, says travel analyst Henry Hardeveldt. But right now, tourists are also willing to pay more for a little personal space.
You just have that much more distance between yourself and the person next to you on the plane.
And more travelers can afford it this year, says Madhu Unakrishnan, editor of Airline Weekly.
People are now taking their first vacations, in some cases, in 15 months. So they've got a lot of money saved up, and they're splurging on the front of the airplane.
Price differences for premium seats have narrowed, and airlines are offering more upgrade promotions to loyalty members, says airline analyst Robert Mann.
So if you have an elite customer status with a certain airline, the ability to get that upgrade is actually pretty good by historical standards.
But if there's a resurgence of COVID-19 in the fall, he says, people who are open to flying now may think twice about getting on a plane. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Leading Senate Democrats say they've come to an agreement amongst themselves in the White House for a $3.5 trillion budget that would fund what President Biden has called investment in human infrastructure. The budget would include money for home care for the elderly and children and efforts to fight climate change. It is, though, just a budget agreement, still needs to be turned into legislation. Let's do the numbers. S&P and NASDAQ futures are up in the 1 to 4/10% range. Dow futures basically flat, up just 4 points. 10-year Treasury yield is at 1.393%. Earlier this week, ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, put its IPO plans on hold after a warning from China's state regulators. Before that, Chinese regulators cracked down on rideshare app Didi after it went public in New York. They went so far as to remove the app from Chinese app stores. We wanted to better understand what is behind this crackdown and whether it signifies a broader financial decoupling between the U.S. and China. So we turn to Martin Chorzempa, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute. Good morning.
Good morning.
When a company lists on a stock exchange, that does not mean it hands over servers full of personal data or private data to the U.S. government or Goldman Sachs or whoever. So how is having an American IPO a data security issue for the Chinese government?
The regulators of the stock exchanges are mostly concerned about the veracity of the financial statements and financial data that's given in the prospectus of the company. But then to get that data and make sure that that audit is done correctly, they need access to very granular information that's contained in the audit papers of those companies. And there, Beijing believes there are state secrets about the contracts, maybe with the government. They also might believe that information in those papers might lead to, you know, potential disclosure of cybersecurity vulnerabilities in those companies.
But at the same time, companies from all over the world list in the United States and abide by our accounting standards. So why would that be a problem for Chinese companies?
In China, there's a much broader idea of what kind of information constitutes state secrets. China's not the only country to have disputes with the United States about this issue. In some cases, companies in Europe have had their governments not want to hand over this kind of data, and there has been an agreement between the U.S. authorities and the authorities in those countries to determine some sensible way for them to get access to what they need to make sure the companies are not, you know, cooking the books, but also not accessing, say, you know, sensitive information about contracts with, say, you know, the local defense department, that kind of thing.
Could an arrangement like that work between the U.S. and China?
I think it could. It's been negotiated for many years. The problem at the moment is that the political climate is not really conducive to a compromise.
Are there any other reasons besides data security that China would be cracking down on large Chinese companies attempting to list in overseas stock markets?
Yes. So for a long time, these powerful technology companies have operated in a regulatory gray zone, both at home and in terms of their foreign listings, full of loopholes. And the rules haven't really been consistently enforced in a very wide variety of areas, from data privacy to data security to restrictions on what role foreign investors can play in these companies. And that's led to a much tougher line on these companies.
Does this mean that U.S. investors have less access to the growth that is occurring in China, and vice versa, Chinese businesses will have less access to U.S. capital to promote that growth?
Definitely on both sides. To what extent is not yet clear. I don't think China wants a wholesale financial decoupling from the United States, even though it is somewhat less reliant on foreign capital than it was in the past. There are still holes in the domestic capital market, but I think we'll settle into some equilibrium with maybe a little bit less engagement on both sides, but not some sort of wholesale delisting.
Martin Chorzempa, Senior Fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.